This Monday, July 7th, Locus Focus presents a special presentation of a new documentary by Barbara Bernstein. Fighting Goliath is a story about the frenetic exploitation of the Canadian tar sands and its rippling effects across the continent. Tune in on Monday, July 7th from 10 to 11 a.m. to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, 91.9 FM Hood River, 104.3 FM Corvallis, or listen online at kboo.fm.
This day before Independence Day, this is Patricia Welch, and here with me is
O.B. Hill,
and I think on the line is Emma Jackson Ford, and we are about to welcome Rashonda Tate Billingsley to the July edition of Black Book Talk. Welcome to you all, but we do want to share one announcement before we get started with the interview, O.B.
Well, I regret to say that the author, Walter Dean Myers, passed yesterday at 76 years old. He's very much known for his writing of numerous books, over 100, dealing with children's subjects. Walter Dean Myers.
So another, unfortunately, another literary voice silence, but his books will be here, and we can all continue to celebrate him in that way. But now we want to welcome... Well, first of all, Emma, are you here? Emma's joining us remotely. Is our third person online? Okay, I'm not hearing anything, so maybe she's not with us yet. Okay, folks, this is live radio. Let's see, is our guest this morning, Ms. Billingsley, Rashonda Tate Billingsley, are you with us?
I sure am.
Well, that's the main thing. Emma will be added as the moment comes. Well, welcome to Black Book Talk.
Thank you so much for having me.
I want to tell our listeners that in addition to the pleasure of talking to her today, that we're going to be able to meet her in person on July 22nd, 6 p.m., at the North Portland Library, free and open to the public. We want you to come on out and give her a real Portland welcome. We have just heard that Emma is on the phone, so Emma, hi there.
Good afternoon. How are you all doing?
Fine. Where are you? Because it's still morning here.
Oh, that's right. I'm an hour ahead. I'm in Denver at the National Education Association. I sneaked off and found a quiet place so I could call.
Okay, let's see. Who wants to go first? And it may be, Emma, you might, because you've actually heard our author, and as I was telling her in a previous conversation, Emma feels like she has more kinship with you. I think Emma might be an AKA, too, but we'll get into that a little later.
Well, that, too, but she's also a fellow Arkansan.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes, ma'am. That's where I am now.
You're in Arkansas. Where?
In Hot Springs, Arkansas. It's my family reunion this weekend.
Okay.
Beautiful, beautiful. So I know that you're from Smackover, and it's only about 15 minutes from El Dorado. And I met you a few years ago in Las Vegas. You were there speaking at a writing conference.
Oh, yes. Okay. I remember that.
I have further read that you used to work for the National Enquirer. How did that
I know. Happen? Don't tell anybody. I was the paparazzi.
That's false.
I know. You know, I really never expected to take that job, but they told me how much it was paying, and I was 21 years old, fresh out of college. And I said, no, I don't want the job. They said, okay, we're going to pay you six figures. And I said, when do you want me to start?
And so I went to work, but I hated it. I hated digging up dirt and gossip on celebrities. So I left after a year.
Well, now, how did you become the writer that we all know? For those of you who may think you know, if you've read Let the Church Say Amen and any of a series of novels along that line, this is the person who brought them to you. But tell us about how you became the author that you are now.
Well, I have always loved writing and making up stories. My mother calls it lying. but for me, it's just my imagination at work. I've always had an active imagination. But I actually took a journalism path. And I was a journalist for 20-plus years, but along the way decided to stop talking about writing a book and actually just write a book.
And tell us about the first book.
The first book that I wrote was My Brother's Keeper, and I could not get a book deal. I sent out letters, and I kept getting rejected left and right. Every day I'd come home, there'd be a new rejection letter in the mailbox. But I believed in my book. I believed in my work, so I self-published and then set out about spreading the word, and I just spread the word however I could and tried to build a buzz about it, and it caught the attention of an agent who signed me with Simon & Schuster, and I've been with them ever since. They re-released my book in 2003, and here I am now on my 36th book.
Whoa.
Yay. I also wanted to ask about your church theme. Several of your books have church themes. How did that come about?
You know, I am a product of a Baptist family, a Baptist faith, and so I grew up in the church. And so you'll see a lot of that and a lot of faith woven through my stories. I am not technically a Christian fiction writer. I am a Christian who writes fiction. And so there are a lot of faith-based themes in my work. But I also write reality. And, you know, as I was saying, the crackheads I know don't say pass the pipe, gosh darn it. So you'll see real stories in my books.
In your books, you have people hooked up in some very strange relationships. Your latest book, you want to say a little bit about that?
Yes, What's Done in the Dark. It's about a woman who accidentally has a one-night affair with her best friend's husband. I know you're like, accidentally,
yes.
Yeah, right.
Fell into the bed.
She makes this horrible mistake, makes a decision to throw caution to the wind and have this one-night affair with her best friend's husband, and he dies overnight. He doesn't wake up the next day. So the question is, does she call for help because she's married too, or does she gather her stuff up and get out of there and pretend she was never there as she helps her best friend plan the funeral? So I like to pose these what-if questions and what kind of position one bad decision can place you in, and that's what I do with What's Done in the Dark.
The great moral dilemma. I still don't know exactly how one accidentally does these things, but then again, that's why we read the book. Tell us about what's your favorite book, if there is, if it can be, or one or two of your favorites, because you have a lot to choose from.
You know, and that's hard. That's almost like saying, which one of your children do you like the
best? That's what people always say. But then they say, well, yeah, but.
But if I had to choose. I do. I mean, it's always the last one that I love the most, but for various reasons. But the one that's perhaps nearest and dearest to my heart is one called The Secret She Kept. And that's because I had to fight for this book. It is a book on mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to fight to get my publishers to let me do this book because they thought it would be too deep. And I don't write deep books per se. I infuse humor into everything that I do. And so once they finally saw the finished product, they were like, okay, wow, we should have let you do this because you tackled a great serious subject in a way that readers can relate to and still be entertained. And so that book, The Secret She Kept, was near and dear because I really had to fight to let them get me to write, let me write about an issue that was close to me.
Okay. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, let's be polite. I think it's really Emma's turn because we're kind of going around the table.
Yeah, you're listening to Black Book Talk on KBOO, and we're on remote control.
That's good. I'm not there, so I can't see when it's my turn.
It's your turn. We'll go round robin it.
Wanted to ask about poetry. Do you have an example or a little sample of your poetry you could share with us?
Yeah, I did. I actually got my start writing poetry. I have always loved doing it. I do have a poetry book, but I really only sell it when I perform. And I'm a 5-time winner of the Spirit in the Words Poetry Competition with the National Association of Black Journalists. So I travel a lot doing that. I really love doing poetry. So it's a part of me as well.
Yeah.
Can we hear just a tiny bit?
Oh, just a tiny bit. Okay. You can inspect and
a big bit if you want to share a big bit, but I'm just trying to coax you.
No, I'll just give you just a tiny bit. This one is, I'm the type of woman. You can inspect and dissect and try to figure out how it is I do all the things I do. You can get Einstein to help you and you still won't have a clue. See, I'm the type of woman that makes and bakes the bacon, the type that lets a man be a man. Y'all don't understand. I'm the type of woman that can be submissive when I want to be, but don't count on that too much. I'm the type of woman other women just can't touch. So that's just a piece.
Maya Angelou would say, yes, sister. Yes, young sister.
Well, tell me, who was your inspiration? I know as a storyteller, did you listen to someone else talk and then try to mimic them, or how did it start?
You know, it's funny that you just mentioned where I got my inspiration, and that actually came from Maya Angelou's I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. I've always been a reader, but that book ignited something inside me. It ignited that love of storytelling. And so that, you know, it was just from there, it was like, this is what I want to do. You know, I've always, there's a picture of me and I was 2, and I had food in one hand and a book in the other. My 2 favorite things in life.
Okay. I want to go back to something you said. You said that when, after your book was successful, you attracted the attention of an agent. Do you really have to have an agent to be successful in publishing?
You actually do not, if you build a buzz about your name. The problem is that at the time, this was again 2000, early 2000, is that, you know, the publishers didn't even want to look at you without an agent. That's not the same anymore. They will take unagented submissions. The problem is that the market is saturated. And so having an agent can actually give you a leg up. Okay. In getting in the market, but it's not impossible at all.
Okay. Emma, I think it's your turn.
It's my turn again. So I read that you, again, I read something. I read that you were an editor in Houston. Is that so they send you things and you edit, or do you work day-to-day for a newspaper?
Both, actually. I am the editor for the Houston Defender newspaper. I've been there since 1993. So even as I moved on to other things in life, I kept working for that because that allowed me to keep my foot in journalism, if you will. But I also edit people's projects. I am a literary editor for other books. I don't do as much now because I started my own publishing company with Victoria Christopher Murray, another author, called Brown Girls Publishing. It's a boutique publishing company, and so we have an amazing roster. So I do stay busy editing our titles that are coming out through Brown Girls Publishing.
What is a boutique publishing company as opposed to something else? Another one.
A boutique publishing company. We're just like the regular publishers, Simon & Schuster, Random House, except much, much smaller. And so that's what we mean by boutique. We get a lot of people that will ask us, well, how much does it cost to publish with you guys? Well, we're a legitimate, real publishing company. So our authors don't pay us. We consider our authors partners. We're just a small publishing company. We're probably what Random House started out as.
Okay. So when we're looking for your books published by your company, we should be looking for Brown Girls Publishing, I hear.
Yes,
Love
Brown
that
Girls
name.
Publishing. Now, my titles still stay with Simon & Schuster. I'm with, you know, everything that I write, my main books come out through Simon & Schuster. And then the books that I publish come out through Brown Girls Publishing.
Okay.
As an editor, how do you go about the conflict of being edited as well as editing?
You know, I actually appreciate an editor because as a writer, we can be really close to a story. An editor is a fresh set of eyes, gives us another way to look at a story. And so I really appreciate what my editor brings to the table. And so I can actually take off my hat when I'm editing someone else's, and then I put, you know, have a different hat when my own work is being edited.
Okay, so let's, you're an editor, you're a publisher, you're a writer. I know that you have done some teaching on the college level, and now you have a movie coming out based on one of your books. So tell us about that.
Yes, ma'am. I'm a Jill of all trades.
Absolutely.
You know, one of the proudest moments of my literary career is watching my words come alive on the screen. My book, Let the Church Say Amen, has been made into a movie. We did the filming in October of 2012, and it is directed by Regina King, produced by Queen Latifah's Flavor Unit. She's one of the production companies. We have an amazing cast, Steve Harris and Nakari Naughton, Hosea Tentez, who plays Malik on the game,
yeah.
Layla Rashawn, just an awesome, awesome cast. I make a cameo in the movie.
Oh, my
and
gosh.
So it was just a wonderful experience. CD Jakes is the executive producer, and it'll be out next year. The movie is done, but when you're dealing with Hollywood, they are very, very slow when it comes to actually getting the movie out.
So not, say, the holiday of this year, not it, all in 2014, but sometime in 2015?
Yes, yes. Right now it's tentatively August of 2015.
Whoa.
If not before then.
And I hear that in addition to this, there's another film coming down the pike, right?
Yes. Well, they actually, BET Films, they're doing original films, and this is one of the first. They've actually bought four of my books to be made into movies. And then we have another one, Holy Rollers, that's being made into a movie with another production company as well. So I've been really blessed in that regard. To not only have my books made into movies, but to be involved in the process. I've worked with Regina King from the beginning. And many times when they buy an author's book, they buy the book and tell the author, see you later.
Right.
But I've actually been involved from the ground up. So it's been an awesome experience.
So you would be listed as not only the author, but the screenwriter for the book?
No, they hired a professional screenwriter, but I work as a producer on the film. I work as a consultant.
Good.
And so they've allowed me to be there the entire time. But they did. They had a professional screenwriter come in and do the script.
But your being there means that you feel that this film is true to your book.
I do.
Wonderful.
And, you know, one of the things that readers, that fans of the book, there are some changes, but I understand that. And I think that's where a lot of authors go wrong with their work. As writers, we write. Well, movie producers have to look at a bigger picture than we do.
Mm-hmm.
They have to take a 400-page book and put it into 90 pages. So there are some crucial changes made that I understand and I respect being a part of the process. But the readers may actually kind of say, okay, what's going on?
Which is good. That means they love you, you know, and they love your work. But yeah, everybody knows. I mean, you know, a film is one thing, a book is another, and you take that in consideration. I'm just so glad that films based on your books are coming out so we can enjoy them in another way.
Yes, I'm very, very blessed in that regard.
So you're making a debut in the first film. Will you have a part in each of the other films?
Oh, I want to be in every one of them. I want more and more lines in each one. You know, they won't let me star in them. But they told me, you know, we'll write you a couple of lines. So I had six lines in this one. I'm going to shoot for 16 in the next one until I have me a full-fledged role. I've already claimed it. You know, when we get up to the point where we can have Denzel star in one of them, I need to be his co-star.
That's a worthy goal.
You have not, because you asked not.
Now, when you go out for these new ventures, you go out and find investors in these projects? Or how do you go about influencing the people to take them on?
Yeah, and that's actually where I have been blessed in that regard, because I don't have to do the legwork of finding investors. Regina King and Queen Latifah, BET is behind it. So they have the money. The average person trying to get a movie done, that's the most crucial part, trying to find investors. And so, you know, BET is part of Sony Viacom, so that, you know, the money is there to make these movies, make them happen.
But I guess another part of the question is, there are probably a lot of authors out here who would love to see their books on the screen. how was the connection made between all these people who wanted to produce and your book?
You know, and I know this sounds like a cliche, but it is the God's honest truth. I got my movie deal by being nice, not by going out and trying to wine and dine people. I was at a book signing. A woman came up. She had on a McDonald's uniform, said, "I want to buy a copy of your book, but you see where I work. I don't get paid until next week." So I bought her my book, I Know I've Been Changed. She read it. She loved it and gave it to her sister, who worked for an airport bookstore in Phoenix. But one day, Juanita Bynum was coming through that bookstore and asked this woman for a recommendation. And the lady said, "You got to read this book by Rashonda Tate Billingsley, because she was so nice to my sister." Mm-hmm. And she convinced Juanita Bynum to buy the book. Juanita did, read it, loved it, called me and asked for my permission to take the book to Hollywood. So I said, "My permission? Do you want me to drive it?" And that's how I got on Hollywood's radar.
Whoa. Okay.
Yeah. You know, and so I know that's a fluke, but I didn't go in expecting or trying to wine and dine all of these people. But it's all about networking and the right connection, because there are so many people with projects, not just authors, but regular screenwriters writing. It's all about being connected to the right people.
And I'm thinking, okay, so Juanita Bynum, one, because of her position in the church world, she would know Reverend T.D. Jakes, as well as a lot of other folks, but that's just another one of those connections to be made. Ah, my. Well, you know, truth is stranger than fiction. Now, you could not have made that up.
I know. And a friend of mine, Tricia Thomas, Halle Berry had a book made into, is making one of her books into a movie, and it came the same way. Tricia gave Halle's hairdresser a copy of the book, and Halle's hairdresser loved it and convinced Halle to read it. So you just never know the 6 degrees of separation.
That's right. And being nice pays
right.
off. Okay.
Are your children old enough to know about your books yet?
They are. My children are 14, 12, and 7. And they are love mommy's books. They're not as impressed with the whole writing thing until their friends are. You know, that they're in that age, especially the 14-year-old will go somewhere and it's no big deal until all of her friends start saying, because I write for young adults as well, so her friends read my books. And she didn't get any interest in them until all the friends started reading them. But they definitely know what I do, and they're very supportive of it.
So what is your mom saying?
My mom, you know, it's so funny because my mother was not a supporter of me being a writer. And not that she didn't believe me or wasn't encouraging. She just had never seen a writer of color. So in her mind, her daughter wants to quit this good paying job to go write books. And so she would always say, "You can't make money writing books." Well, when the career took off, then she was the main one saying, "When you gonna buy your mama a car?" But at the time, she wasn't feeling my dream. Now she claims to use reverse psychology on me. But, you know,
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. What'd you say?
I was saying, tell them the story you told us about you taking your mother to Walmart when you had an appearance.
Yes, you know, I actually had an appearance, and there was, it was packed, wall to wall. It was so many people in there. I was doing a book signing, and my mother came with me because it was on the way to the casino. And so we went to the book signing, we walked in, and all these people, and she was just dumbfounded and said, "What are all these people doing here?" And I said, "They're here for me, Mom." And she was like, "Oh, no, they must be here for the free wine they're giving out."
Oh, this is real. I have a question. You have written a book, at least one, and I think more, with Victoria Christopher Mary. How does that come about that you can write with somebody? I'm trying to envision that, and I'm having problems. But it was a great book.
Awesome.
Our book club read it.
Experience. Thank you. You know, my publisher actually suggests we write a book together, and I think it works so well because Victoria is literally my writing soulmate, because we're reading this book when we're reading over it, and we can't remember who wrote what. And the way that we work is I write a chapter, I send it to her, and she feeds off of that and writes her chapter and then sends it to me, and vice versa. And in 3 books that we've written, we've never changed a single word that the other person wrote.
Mm-hmm.
So it has to be a chemistry there to do something like that. When you try to write a book with somebody, you have to have some type of writing chemistry.
Tell us about one of the books that you've written with her. just so people have a sense of that plot.
Sinners and Saints was the very first book in the series. What we did is we took one of my most popular characters and her most popular character, both of whom are first ladies, and we had them meet up in one book. And so these women, their husbands were running for the president of the American Baptist Association, and these women went at it. And so it was about their growth and their maturity, and they've already have a following in their individual books. So we just brought them together in this one book. Or actually, it's three, and we're working on the fourth and final book in the series.
We read and discussed Friends and Foes. Yeah. It's just like, whoa, this is too real. I don't know what I was expecting. I mean, it's funny. They're scandalous. You're like, what? And then you think, oh, wait a minute, let me just go back and really think about church. What I like about your books is we can all laugh at ourselves, and we know there's some stuff happening in church that is just hilarious. I mean, you know, maybe it shouldn't have happened, but human beings are involved, so, you know, there's going to be that. But the books are real, they're funny, and I just said, how did you get these two women together? So I'm glad you did that.
Definitely. Yes, thank you. We enjoy it. We love writing together.
Now, with 36 books and co-authorships and now movies, it would seem to me that a autobiography would be in line. It would give other people opportunity to look at the various aspects of how you go about your time management, especially.
You know, that it's funny that you say that, because I get that question a lot, would I be doing an autobiography? And I just don't feel like I've lived enough to tell my story. But then I get exactly what you're saying. People saying, no, you know, I want to know how you do it all. And it's not something that I've ruled out. I'm not there yet in terms of writing it, because I feel like I'm just an ordinary girl doing extraordinary things. And so I have to get my mindset right to feel like I'm at a point where my story is large enough to be told to the world.
Well, soon and sooner. I think, let's see, Emma, did you have a question? Because we're getting near the end, and I know I have at least one, but it's probably your turn.
Just one more. What next?
Yeah. I am forever writing, so I'm always working on new books, and I am actually now taking a stab at screenwriting. I am working on the screenplay for Holy Rollers, per Regina's request. And so it's a whole different ball game of writing, but I really am enjoying it. And I will just continue writing books. As long as people are there to read them, I'll keep writing.
All right.
Well, you know, we always ask our authors if they have some particular song, piece of music, musician, or whatever, that they would like us to play in the opening and close of the program. And you said Golden, Living My Life Like It's Golden by Gil Scott. And Jill Scott. I was thinking of Gil Scott here, but Jill Scott. And I must say, it does seem like you are living your life that way. I don't know if it seems like that to you. You probably just take it for granted, but it seems like you are living to every fiber of your being and just taking advantage of and exploiting every skill and talent that you have.
You know, I am. And someone asked me recently during an interview, what would I want my tombstone to say? If I could only pick two words, what would I want it to say? And I would just want it to say, she lived. Because I live each day to its fullest. You know, I am all about walking in my purpose, pursuing my passion, and doing what I feel like I was put on this earth to do. I love writing books. I love it so much I would do it for free. The great thing is I don't have to.
Well, you know something? We are just so looking forward to having you. I mean, not just to hear about your books, but just to enjoy your spirit. So, and also we know we have to mention that this is an AKA sister. We want everybody to come out and see her, but we know we've seen some things. Your sisters here are coming out strong in terms of supporting you and passing the word. So again, we invite everybody to come out and see her on July 22nd. That's a Tuesday at 6 p.m. at the North Portland Library. I think we're all going to have a really good time.
I am looking forward to it. It is my first visit to Portland, Oregon. I've been touring a long time, and this is my first stop in Portland, so I'm excited.
Oh, then you have to make sure they schedule it so we can take you around. Oh, this is even better. You're going to have a ball.
Wonderful. Looking forward to it.
Okay. Well, happy ending to this month's Black Book Talk. This is the Library Lady saying have a wonderful holiday weekend.
And O.B. Hill with Let's Read, Walk, and Talk at Reflections.
And Emma Jackson Ford, Bookwoman, saying see you next month. And Rashonda, see you on the 22nd.
Yes.
Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
KABU for the 27th Annual Waterfront Blues Festival. KABU will again broadcast the entire festival from noon to 10 p.m., July 3rd through the 6th. The broadcast will also be carried by various stations of Oregon Community Media for statewide coverage of this Oregon Food Bank Benefit Festival. Again, July 3rd through the 6th, noon to 10 p.m. each day here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
You are listening to a live broadcast of the Waterfront Blues Festival on Oregon Community Media Stations KBOO Portland, KSKQ FM Ashland, KPOV FM Bend, KSOW LP Cottage Grove, KMUZ FM Turner, KPIX LP Staten, KWSO FM Warm Springs, and KYAQ on the web from Lincoln County.